Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. My name is Rob Cope. I am your host today, and we are talking to the wonderful, incredibly talented saxophonist and composer, Olivia Murphy. Before we get to the interview, we're going to have a listen to her piece, Patricia. This is recorded by her own jazz orchestra, the Olivia Murphy Jazz Orchestra. Here we go. Olivia Murphy, welcome to the Jazz Podcast. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm very excited that we get to talk to you today. We just started our show listening to your piece, your composition, Patricia, which is your jazz orchestra, which I believe Mr. Johnny Chung is playing the tenor saxophone at the start there.
Yeah, he's playing the lead part in that.
Amazing, amazing. What a beautiful piece. Made me very happy to watch because I recognize a few faces. Like I'm not too out of it just yet. Olivia, tell us a little bit about yourself and your music.
So I'm a composer and musician currently based in Southeast London. I particularly like writing for big band, but I like writing for a whole host of different ensembles and sizes. But generally I like writing with improvised music in mind. But big band jazz orchestra is where I really find the best environment for me to sort of tell my sort of musical stories. But I've studied in Birmingham, and I'm originally from Peterborough. So I've moved around a little bit over the last decade or so, but I'm really enjoying living in London. I've been here for the last couple of years now, and it's really nice sort of immersing myself in the scene here and everything.
Did you enjoy Birmingham?
Yeah, I loved it. I love Birmingham as a city. It's really exciting. Separate to the music scene, the things like the independent food scene, the environment there is great. It's really buzzing. It's consistently. I moved to Birmingham in 2015, I think, and loads of new things were happening then, lots of new buildings and investments. And it sort of is just constantly up and up and up there. And it's really exciting place to be. Music scene was, I think, also the perfect place for me when I was 18 moving. It was really supportive. I hadn't had too much of a jazz education, really. Like little bits and pieces, but I don't think I would necessarily would have been ready to move to London. I think it was a perfect place to sort of be around like similar peers of people and really lovely people. And the jazz scene there is a really nice community of students and recent graduates who are really sort of, you all know each other and it's really friendly. So it's perfect in that sense, I think, to get involved with the scene and learn a lot. And so it's great.
I went to play there with Johnny Silk's big band, probably around
that time,
2015 or 16. And it's the first time I've been to the Conservatoire, and they built so much. I think they had like a whole new wing. Concert hall was lovely, big, like the facilities, the whole college seemed amazing. I was deeply impressed, and Johnny always speaks so highly of it.
Yeah, Johnny's great. It's also, it's funny because if you went in 2015, that building is completely gone now. It's all demolished and they've got the new building.
Yeah, maybe I feel like I was in a new building, but...
Oh, maybe it's...
I don't know. I don't know what happened to this old building. I'm too old to know what year this even was now, but it definitely, things were happening and you had that sense of that this is the place to be right now. So it's a brilliant... And I know exactly
2017, the new building, I think, maybe went up. So
I'm going to count back. I might have to do some serious maths later with my calendar. I was like you when I turned 18. I went to the Royal Northern because I just wasn't quite ready for London yet. You know, it's a very different thing to be a student in Birmingham or Manchester because it's a small community. Did you find that you learned a lot from the people you were studying with?
Yeah, definitely. I studied jazz saxophone, and they have got great teachers. I mean, the thing is with conservatoires in the UK, the teachers pretty much, like, they teach all over the place. So regardless of where you end up studying, usually you're having hours with the same sorts of people.
Yes.
Or even if you're not having the same teachers, you're probably having lessons with someone who themselves had lessons with the same person as their equivalent who's teaching, you know. So it's sort of, you end up learning the same stuff regardless. But yeah, it was always a real mix. But there's some great teachers there when I was there. John O'Gallagher is an amazing American saxophonist. He's lovely. He was teaching there. He was doing his PhD while I was there, and I was lucky to have some lessons with him. Percy Persklov as well, the trumpet player.
Percy, he's my hero, that man.
Yeah, he's someone like that being there. It kind of gives you a funny perspective of the possibilities of trumpet early on. You think, wow, every trumpets can just easily play like that.
Yeah, like, that makes it sound like a tenor sax.
Yeah. Just
remarkable. That's amazing. Like you said, imagine if that was the first jazz trumpet you ever heard. You'd be like, guess everyone could do this.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he was kind of one of the first. I mean, I heard jazz trumpet before in recordings and stuff, and a few maybe gigs, but properly in terms of tuition and sort of hearing like up close, that was one of the first sort of things. It's like, oh my God.
Oh, that's so great. So tell me about the big band writing. Because, sorry, I think I already asked you this and then got too carried away. How did you discover that writing for big band was your voice?
So basically, I think when I was younger, so before I even started college, I really liked exploring little ideas on the piano. I started learning piano first when I was a lot younger and only started learning saxophone when I was about 15 or so. But I always like playing around with ideas on the piano and writing small ideas. And I really enjoyed that. When I got to conservatoire, I didn't really write at all for probably my first 3 years there, or first 2.5 years. I think we did like a composition project in first year, and I don't think I did very well with them. And it kind of maybe put me off a bit. And maybe you're also just so busy when you're studying your first study instrument. It's at least the first few years, I found it just sort of all my focus was going into that. But then in third year, we had like a big band module, and I think I just really enjoyed doing it and sort of getting back into writing and expanding that. I knew absolutely nothing about how to do it. A lot of the sort of technical lessons on writing for big band I kind of missed because I was on Erasmus when all of
those
first initial lessons were happening. The Hague. So that was great in itself, but I remember coming back and then sort of a big band sort of project was due in a few months or a couple of months or something, and but I like that. I like sort of the big challenge of learning by myself a little bit, and had a little bit of tuition here and there throughout that module, but again, like, I don't think mark-wise it was great, but, like, I don't think it mattered at that point because I really enjoyed it. And I think also there was, like, a big band award at the college that year and I won that. And it's funny how sort of just a little bit of praise in that way, it wasn't, like, a mark, but it was just a separate award. And Richard Isles sort of presented it, I think, at that year. And it was just nice having that kind of, oh, this sounds really nice, and a little bit of encouragement, and to sort of trust yourself early on in that when you're starting out. And fourth year, I ended up doing sort of for a major final project type thing. I did sort of like a 13-piece big band, medium-sized band sort of, and I really liked doing that. And that sort of, I just really felt like I was finding that it just felt like a level of kind of comfort and confidence that I've never felt playing. I'd always struggled, and I do struggle a lot with just playing and feeling comfortable being myself and finding that kind of voice with playing saxophone and composing, particularly for big band, but just composing generally and presenting my music was something completely different. So yeah, I just really enjoyed it. And then since, I think after I graduated, I got like the Nigo composer chair and was able to write more through that.
So you were the composer in residence for 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of, I got the chair January 2020, I think. And then nothing happened for a year because of COVID.
Yeah.
But then the second year it was pretty crazy because we had this tour and with the Amy Winehouse tour, and in the run up to that, I sort of did pretty much all the arrangements for it. So that was great. And it was a great opportunity for me to just churn out lots of arrangements. And it was also quite open creatively as well. So it wasn't just sort of like a tribute sort of thing, which I wasn't fussed about doing, spending loads of time doing, because I'm still sort of feel very, at that point, definitely more formative. I wanted to really explore creatively the arrangements, and I love Amy Winehouse and her songs, but I also wanted to bring my own voice to it. And it was great to be able to do that. So yeah, I've just found sort of through those sort of experiences of doing it, I've learned the most and have found really enjoyment. Yeah, I've had like a few sort of bits of mentorship here and there, but I'm quite proud that it's just been able to sort of just go through a lot of experience and learn sort of while doing it, which is great. So
is this like self-reflection where you write something, hear it back, and then sort of build on it based on what you hear?
Yeah, definitely. And I really like, I think with big band particularly, I really like the opportunity of including 15 to 20 voices, individual like improvising voices. And especially with my own now big band projects, it's really important to me to choose each person who I invite to play in the band. It's because I really love their individual playing. It's not just because I just need a trombone person to fill that role, you know, I just need a third trombone. It's because I really like either A, how you improvise, or your tone, or how you just come with your attitude to music. And I think that's really important. And so with my big band composition, the notes, it then is so much as expanded and built on that from their playing and the improvisations around that. And especially from the rhythm section as well, I find it really helps. But also for me, like I really enjoy conducting big band, and that's a big part for me. And I really enjoy still being part of the performance and crafting that performance in the moment. I don't know. Like, I think as a trained performer, it feels weird to me being the composer that sits at the side while your piece is being performed, or giving your piece away to be looked at and rehearsed, and then you hear it in concert. Part of that kind of worries me because I'm a bit like, no, I want to be in control, and I want to be there, and I want to hear it in the rehearsal, you know?
Oh, yeah. When I write stuff, I never write myself the melody, because I think your sort of footprint as the composer is already all over the music. And when people listen to it, they can't escape the fact that you wrote it, and they'll think about it subconsciously the entire time. So you're sort of so intertwined at this point that it's quite nice to let somebody else interpret it their way, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I think also with me, like when I'm writing, a lot of it is very emotional and always comes from it really helps me to write from like a particular emotional place and or an idea or memory or something. It's very visual for me in my mind before it comes down. So it always becomes quite personal a lot of the time.
Yeah. I asked Bob Mintzer on his episode how he wrote for Big Band, how he learned to write for Big Band. And he just said, well, I played in the Buddy Rich Big Band and I listened to what was going on. I was oh, right. I was like, but what about? And he was like, you just hear the techniques and you use them. So I don't hear anything. I hear the piece, but I'd never be like, oh, I see what's going on there. How do you feel you've learned the kind of specific techniques that allow you to get your emotion out of the music?
Mm. Yeah, well, I definitely think I haven't learned, 100%. I feel like I've still got loads of ways to go. And that's what I think is great about music generally, is that you've always got more ways to develop and find like the technical stuff, yeah, but also just yourself as a person. That will change how music impacts you and how you want to put your like identity into music. But when I was younger, I played in lots of big bands throughout college. We were always playing in sort of the bands. And
were there any projects that really stood out to you that really sort of affected your musicality?
Well, Maria Schneider's orchestra came when I was in first year at college, and I didn't know who she was at that point because I was 18 and didn't know much about jazz. But she came like very early on in my first year, and
wow.
It was eye opening. Yeah,
cool.
And she played at the Symphony Hall in Birmingham, and she did like lots of workshops with her and the whole band, not just because sometimes she comes over and does work with different ensembles.
Yeah.
But it was her and her whole jazz orchestra, which is such a rare experience. And we're so lucky that we're able to experience that. And it was,
that's incredible. Great. What an amazing opportunity.
It was great and quite a miracle that Jeremy Price, the head of jazz, that was all organized. I don't think she did it with any other conservatory either. It was just a Birmingham thing, but the whole jazz orchestra came over, and I remember they did like an open rehearsal. So the whole band sat around in a circle and her in the middle and some of the older years at the time were sort of sat in with the jazz orchestra playing these parts. I'm kind of gutted I wasn't a couple of years older and wasn't able to sit and do that, but even then, just being there watching. And then she did sort of like a bit of a composition masterclass. That was just eye-opening. And I think also for me at that age, straight away, for my first experience of, I will have seen other jazz, like big bands and stuff, maybe more sort of amateur and level big band, seeing them perform and before that point. But I think on a professional level, that was the first big band I saw that I can remember anyway. And to see such an incredible person run a big band from the start and be like, okay, this is the perfect role model. So it was never a point in my mind where I thought this is not going to be possible for me. So I think that was great. And just, that was really inspiring. And that was just more of like a general style. Loved hearing that. And it was just really eye opening of what jazz orchestra can be, because before that point I'd played lots of Ellington, Thad Jones, just general sort of junior level big band arrangements for younger bands.
Like, more traditional, anyway. That's great. Let's say that.
And I love that too. I love Ellington, and I love playing that stuff. I love playing in big bands. That's great. And I always love that more than anything else, really. When I was playing more, and I think that helped, definitely taking in sort of hearing, okay, this is what trombones tend to do here, this is what saxes do, all of that kind of stuff. But, I think that's all stuff that you can learn, and the theory stuff, but hearing just the possibilities of sound-wise and emotion-wise.
That's what Maria does better than anyone, isn't it?
Yeah, just... exactly. Yeah, it's like telling a story through music, which is the most important thing, or what big band is important for me, I think.
I asked her to come on the Jazz podcast, and she was on last month. And it's episode 200.
Has that come out yet?
Yeah, it's called Celebrating Frank Kimbrough. So the pianist in Maria's band, who sadly passed away in 2020, we made an episode about Frank's music and life. And Maria was so lovely. She spent ages and ages on Zoom just chatting away about, well, loads about Frank, the music. Like you said, so much of it's about personality and writing for the person and writing something that lets that person then take over the space and let it go. It's quite interesting listening to how Frank would talk to her about not worrying so much in the solo sections when she was younger about it, if it goes somewhere that she didn't imagine or if no one knows where it is that you know. And then also she spent a solid 10 minutes talking about the royal family, which she was really into. She's really into like Prince Harry and the
that really tickled me
that someone like her could have any hobbies outside of music.
She really loves like bird watching and things like that, right? She did sort of a masterclass with Nigel, like a Zoom thing, and she was talking about that, so it's great. I think that's important, having sort of that outside, sort of bringing outside perspectives to music. I'm not wild on, it's fine if people have this attitude to composition that's on them, but for me, I'm really uninterested in being super correct and it's great to know the history, and I'm definitely still continually working on that, but I'm not bothered about creating a piece of music that's showy for the sake of you know what I mean?
I know exactly, super
mathsy almost. And I don't care if it's mathsy, but then the emotion and the story prevails, and that's the most important thing. That's cool. That's exciting. But I don't like it when the only thing that comes across is being like, oh, that's really clever. I'm not that fussed about that personally. I like listening to things where it feels like I'm really sort of moved and inspired myself after listening to it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. To be really clean and correct is a great word. It's like, yeah, but does it sound good?
Like, you get that a lot, I think, particularly with big band stuff as well, because there's sort of the different sort of maybe slightly more emotion driven storytelling sort of aspect, and then you get the kind of very you get it with everything small band playing as well, where it's sort of playing the tradition, playing it really well and really strong, but not really not necessarily trying to go in your own direction with it, which is fine if that's what you want to do, but it's just not for me personally.
What are your outside influences then, talking about bringing that outside in? What are the kind of things that you're into or would do to relax?
So I'm one of these people that I find it really hard to turn off my mind. I find it really hard to, even when I'm like sitting still, to sort of turn off the kind of stresses or kind of voices, sort of being like, no, you need to be doing this, you know, which sounds a bit crazy, but it's sort of, I find it really hard to not, to sort of to relax mentally. But I'm trying to sort of, I went through a long period where I wasn't really reading at all, even though I used to like it, but I'm trying to do that a lot more and just sort of going out, and as we're southeast London here, so it's nice going down, so for a nice walk down there by the water, it's like my favorite place to be really, just sort of trying to relax mentally, I think, has been tried to be really important over the last 6 months to a year, to try and find some sort of mental space, which helps, because then it's, funnily enough, like when my mind's super busy with all these things I should be doing, I find it the hardest to then feel inspired to write in the first place. So I have to like silence those thoughts to be able to then have more like inspired musical things to come through. But yeah, they're the kind of the main things, it's, I think. But I mean, outside of also jazz, I just like listening to bits and pieces of music. I do just like a bit of pop here and there, but I've been getting more into musicals again recently.
Ooh, I love these. like these shouldn't be shameful admissions. I'll happily tell you what I'm listening to, because yeah, I used to never listen to pop music, and now I'm super into it. I've like grown on me more and more every year.
Yeah, I think it's a shame when people would like take a huge sweeping judgment and be like, no, I don't listen to that whole thing, because you know, it's a whole wide variety. And
yeah, you have a favorite pop artist?
Well, they're not really pop, but I do really love a bit of Paramore. I've been listening to their new album quite a lot. more like, what would you call them? Emo, punk, yeah. Rock kind of thing. That kind of thing is more my sort of my thing. But yeah, I do love a good musical as well. I think that's more of a sort of guilty pleasure. Went to see Wicked the other day, actually, which was good. It's like living my like primary school sort of. Like going back in memories of.
Oh, it sounds great. My wife went to see Wicked and she said it was the best show that she'd ever seen. She was well into it.
It is great. Yeah. Yeah, there's some really, really great songs. That kind of like really rock power sort of song, female-led, just really rocky song, really strong vocals. It's just something. It's just like, oh my God, I love it. It's great.
Yeah, Lizzo is a real guilty pleasure of mine. I never really listened to her music. And then I saw her on Am My Next Guest, which is like David Letterman.
David Letterman, yeah.
Yeah, his Netflix show. And she was playing that and getting the flute out and playing and like creating songs with him in the episode. You can see her like producing and working. And when you see someone like that in the moment and you're like, oh my God, she's a genius. You can actually, you don't just hear the finished product. You see a bit of the work process. You hear a bit of the flute playing. You realize how incredibly talented and gifted she is. And then when I went and listened to some of her tunes, I was like, oh, no way. you know, but I think weirdly as a musician, it kind of drew me in first to be able to see her working rather than just hear. I guess it's just there's so much production on like a pop hit that sometimes it's hard to know what's real.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's easy just to hear sort of sometimes not the best lyrics and then be like, okay, that's the only thing I'm going to take from this. And sometimes they're good as well, but you know, then going back and being like, okay, there's so many different layers of production here, which is crazy in itself. And it's sometimes when I listen to stuff like that, I think, oh, well, my job as a composer feels a lot easier because I've just got, all I've got to do is sit down, write these parts for all these people, and then it just gets performed. And then if and when I do an album of that, we go into the studio, get records, and someone mix and masters it. But there's no sort of post sort of adding these extra layers in, going in and someone sort of adding stuff. I don't even know anything about all of that.
No, it's a whole other world, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I always bothers me as thinking like we have to be experts in everything we do. And I find it very satisfying to draw my own line in the sand and be like, no, I am not going to learn how to do like electronics, pedals. I bought an Iwi, which is sold, and I'm not going back down that path. You know, it's got to, otherwise you just spend your whole life feeling bad that you can't do everything.
I think particularly on a smaller scale as well, like as people who play woodwind instruments, I remember at college, it's like, okay, so you have your alto and then you also get your soprano and then it's like, oh, we're going to get tenor and then get a Barry and it's like a flute, a clarinet, and it's just like, when does it end? Like I just want to be happy playing one instrument. I don't want to have to be able to play eight of them and then have to feel like I'm really strong at all of it, you know.
Oh yeah, I remember a big band project coming up and the phrase came down, Rob, you play bass clarinet, right? And I was like, do I guess, you know. And it's like, never mind practicing the instrument I was there to practice. It was like, oh God, I better get this thing making a sound now.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I do love bass clarinet. I would love to have a bass clarinet, but it's just, again, too much stuff.
Yeah, you've got to draw the line somewhere. I've got my bass is sitting right here behind me, but it's the worst, most disgusting bass clarinet case in the world. But the ones I can't really play, if I don't leave them out all the time, they just fall to pieces, you know.
Right, yeah.
It's like juggling, but everything's constantly on the way down. That's my life. So tell us, Olivia, what have you got coming up? What's in the diary?
Well, I've mostly just been sort of writing a bit. I had a really busy year last year with sort of releasing the jazz orchestra EP and the trio EP as well, and sort of various bits and pieces going on. And the last couple of months have been just focusing on writing a bit, sort of focusing a bit more long term. I've got a few unannounced bits and pieces happening in summer, so hopefully there'll be a couple of gigs coming back with the jazz orchestra then, which would be great. And then long term, hopefully within the next year, we'll see how it goes. I'd really like to go into the studio and record the like debut studio album, really, of the jazz orchestra tunes. It's just a case of funding, essentially, is it. But at the moment, I'm just trying to write some new material. I feel, because the music I did at the performance, the recording for my EP last year, was music I wrote in mid-2021, really. A couple of new bits and pieces, but generally it's all stuff that I wrote almost 2 years ago now. So I feel like lots of changed in my life. Emotionally, I feel very different. I kind of just feel like I want to sort of have some more sort of updated charts in the pad, and I'm working on a few different pieces now, really. So that's the focus at the moment.
That sounds really exciting. I'd love to hear an album. That's the dream.
Yeah, I would too.
You mentioned your trio. I'm going to finish this show by playing our lovely listeners the track Moonrise. But before we listen to it, can you tell us a little bit about the track and about the trio?
Yeah, so it's on this EP anyway, me on clarinet, Ollie Chalk on piano, and Becca Wilkins on vocals. It's super sort of like acoustic, quite quiet sounding EP. Generally all about one night's sleep. And Moonrise is one of the first ones I wrote. I was kind of going off of, it kind of sounded like a tune that was maybe going to be in, could have worked in something like Grand Budapest Hotel by Wes Anderson.
Oh God, I think about that movie all the time.
I love Wes Anderson so much. He's one of my favorite like film directors, creators. I find his film so aesthetically pleasing and amazing, and I love the music. And the other, I mean, I think my favorite film of his is Isle of Dogs, but one of my other favorite ones is Moonrise Kingdom. So the name comes from that, and luckily it fits in with the dream sort of.
Is that the one with
anyway,
the kids as the main characters? Yeah.
Yeah, I love that film. It's wonderful, and it's so sort of, I just love the kind of hope and the nice feelings that his films sort of tend to leave you with.
Yeah.
So it's based kind of on that. That's the title, but it's just sort of, it's called Moonrise.
Wow. What a wonderful note to end on. Finding such like beloved shared interest is so good. I see so much of it in music. It gets me thinking back to that. I was listening to it the other day, the Grand Budapest. The soundtrack is really funny because it's kind of made up a whole score for a country that doesn't exist.
Yeah. And there's like the monks singing and stuff, isn't there? And it's great.
Incredible scenes. Well, Olivia, thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast. It's been an absolute delight to talk to you. Here's the track Moonrise. La-da, la-da.